Good morning and welcome to the conference call of ELUMEO SE. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. May I now hand you over to Mr. Fischer.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. A very warm welcome to our first web conference for the half-year report 2015. I hope you will enjoy it. We've put together some information for you, and I would suggest to start right now.
Good morning also from my side. My name is Wolfgang Bouyer. I am the chairman of ELUMEO Group, and I will have the pleasure to quickly guide you through the introductory pages of our half-year financial presentation. As I assume that most of the participants are quite familiar with our business, I will go through the first pages quite quickly in order to just give you a quick wrap-up about who ELUMEO is and what our strategic focus in the next years is going to be. And then we will go into a lot more detail for the half-year financials, and that will be done by Bernd Fischer. Our management team is a team that has been working together since 2008. We have formed ELUMEO as a partnership amongst us. When we launched ELUMEO, we launched this essentially as a family business. As you can see on the next page, it has been launched in 2008 and ever since has been growing quite quickly. The objective of the business is to be a manufacturer and electronic retailer of genuine gemstone jewelry. We started in Germany, expanded into the UK, Italy in 2010 and 11, into France in 2012. In 2014, we formally put together our entire business in order to form ELUMEO Group, and then in 2015, in order to take advantage of the huge strategic opportunity ahead of us, we went public on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, as you are all very well aware of. The transformation opportunity that is ahead of us comes from the fact that the European market for gemstone jewelry is still an enormously fragmented market with small national players across all countries and no European-wide player as of now. ELUMEO is the fastest growing business in the market for European gemstone jewelry and at the same time one of the most international players. In this market situation, we expect a major transformation going on in the coming years, and we would like to drive that transformation. As you can see on the next page, that transformation is going to be driven mainly by four factors, which is vertical integration, price leadership, internationalization, and we all have to take into consideration that jewelry is one of the least branded goods products in the consumer goods industry due to the fact that the branding of jewelry mostly comes from the raw materials used. So as you can see on the right side, there's a ruby ring. People will associate this ring mostly being a ruby ring and not so much a juvelo ring as our German subsidiary or a Christring or a Wempe ring. As you can see on the upper left corner, and I will also go through that only quite quickly because I think most of you have seen our roadshow presentation and therefore are you familiar with that. In retail, there's a major lesson that can be learned about innovation over the last 150 years, which is that innovation was mostly driven by vertical integration, price leadership, and based on these two things, internationalization. And this starts with Woolworth, IKEA, H&M, Aldi, Primark. So in all other markets that have been transformed in particular consumer products over the last 150 years in retail, these were the driving factors, and this is what we foresee to happen also in the jewelry market. And as you can see on the next page, we see ourselves perfectly positioned in order to drive that transformation because we already today run a fully vertically integrated value chain, and that provides us with a huge price advantage over the competition, as you can see. At the same time, we cover every possible electronic distribution channel available. So basically, we leave the choice on what people would like to buy and how people would like to buy the jewelry from us to the consumer, whether they would like to buy via the web or via television, via mobile phone apps or via personal shopping. And Bernd is going to show you some information on how these distribution channels are evolving. And it is quite obvious that in line with a change in customer sentiment on how to buy things, also our distribution channels at the moment are changing quickly, moving away from television and moving into the web as people change their buying habits. Based on that outset, we have developed a strategy, and we said we have three major focuses in our strategy, which is going to be to enhance our cost leadership, to drive digitalization, and to expand. And in these three areas, we have defined a rather large number of projects so that we can drive the business along these three major strategic directions. And I would like to go a little bit more into detail on that in order to show you not only what has happened in the first half year, which is something that we mostly reflected already in the prospectus when we went public, but also what has happened after that. So what are the projects that we have started and developed after we went public, so that you can see what we have done in order to use the proceeds from the IPO in order to continue our growth. The first strategic focus, obviously, of our group is always going to be to enhance our cost leadership, because our pricing proposition is the key differentiator against all of the competition. As you have seen on the page before, we are a clear price leader in the market for gemstone jewelry, and therefore, for us, it is of utmost importance to make sure that we continue to have that cost leadership in order to continue to give that level of value added to our customers. The four major projects that we have defined prior to the IPO and that we have continued to roll out also after the IPO are, number one, the building of a new factory in Chantaburi, which is now almost 80% complete. So we expect to be able to move our operations in Q4 from the old factory to the new factory. And that new factory is going to enable us to realize a pretty significant cost saving in the labor cost per unit produced, as it is going to be a lot more efficient. But Bernd will give you some more detail about that. The second is a bulk purchase of gemstone inventory, which has been a change in the way we acquire our gemstones. As you know, in the prior years, our company has been solely financed out of cash flow, and we never took any external financing, which has limited us in our ability to buy gemstones at large volumes at low prices, because we mostly went with a demand model where suppliers were supplying gemstones to us and we were buying them after we actually used them, and they left these gemstones in our so-called gem bank for roughly half year. But that obviously resulted in higher gemstone prices, because these suppliers charged us a fee essentially for leaving these gemstones there. As now we are able to finance our inventory in a different manner, we have started to procure gemstones in an outright cash acquisition, and that has led to pretty significant discounts in the gemstone prices that we have been paying. And these discounts continue to happen, which is something that you're also going to see later on in the presentation, when Bernd is going to show you a little bit about our gross margin development, in particular after the IPO. The two other projects are that we started to move into an automated warehouse system in Italy. And now, based on that experience, we have started to do that also in the UK and in Germany. And both of these fully automated warehouses in the UK and in Germany will also be completed at the end of the year. In the UK, it's pretty much done. So kind of the warehouse has been installed and attached to our management system. In Germany, it's building day by day. So every day we can go there and watch how it's coming along. And we expect that to be finished by November. So both of these projects will be completed in this year. And these kind of were the four most important projects that we ran in order to enhance our cost leadership. The second strategic focus is to drive digitalization, so to roll out all of our digital access points across all of the sales territories where we are present, and to also further enhance our customer experience. The first project on that was that based on the IPO, we have been able to offer some more attractive payment methods to our customers and also to change some of the access points that we offer to our customers in the German market. Bernd will give you some more detail about that. Then on top of the apps that we launched in Germany, France, the Netherlands, and Spain prior to the IPO, we also now launched our mobile phone app in Italy. We will in Q4 this year also roll out our web shop in Italy and prior to that in the UK. We are almost complete to roll out our mobile phone app in the UK. In addition to the smart TV apps that we developed for Samsung in Germany and also in Italy, we have now started to roll out more television apps on other platforms such as Android TV, Amazon Fire TV, and also we've developed a separate HBB TV app. So we have started to add more digital access channels to our Gemstone products, and therefore we leave our customers even more choice to how to access us. The third area has been expansion, where we basically have two separate methods on how to expand our business, which is adding additional web shops to our online business and at the same time also launching new TV stations. We have said in the strategy prior to the IPO that we are planning to launch 10 more local language web shops until 2017 and two more countries with a local TV presence until 2019, and both of these projects are well underway. The first is that we opened up a separate web shop for the Belgian market that is completely done. Then we have been able to a joint venture partner to also enter the American market with a web shop only approach by launching first a new website to start accumulating traffic in the United States of America, and until the end of this year we will run also a web shop in the United States of America that will be fully managed out of Europe, just as we run all of our other web shops in Europe out of Berlin. You may recall that we have been operating a web shop out of Hong Kong under the name New York Gemstones in the past, where we also have centered the entire customer service in Berlin. So we have gained quite some experience on all the, on how to run a web shop that is outside of Europe from Europe in a cost-efficient manner. Not surprisingly, the American market has always been a very important market for our offering on New York Gemstones, and therefore we have decided to launch also our brand Juvilo in the United States of America. And we assume that we will have a full web shop present in the U.S. Until the end of this year. At the same time, we will launch also a web shop in Scandinavia until the end of the year, which is going to cover Norway, Denmark, and Sweden. That is something that is currently being planned for either Q4 or Q1 2016, depending on how fast we will be able to hire the required personnel in order to have the manpower servicing our customers. And then the last but not least important point is we have now a full fully owned subsidiary in the French market, Jubileo France SAS, which was the first most important step in order to be able to obtain a television license for the French market. So we have kind of formed that company now, and we're now in the process of obtaining the required permissions in the French market in order to launch a TV station, and we hope to be legally available or legally ready to go into the French market by the end of the year, and then we will start kind of negotiating with distribution partners in the French market on how to actually launch a business in the French market. So this was a real quick wrap-up about our strategic situation and what the projects are that we have started after we have gone public, and Bernd will now go a little bit more into the details of these projects.
Okay. So we prepared some slides for the let's say mentioned highlights, and after that we will come to the financials, and we will close with the kind of summary of our key investment highlights. And after that, there should be sufficient time to be able to have some Q&A. Okay. Wolfgang already talked about the factory in Canterbury. There are some pictures. So you see that the building from the outside looks quite proper right now. So there's not quite a lot to do. It's more about the interior, electricity, air condition, workbenches have to be installed. This is what is going to happen right now while we're talking. And we believe that the efficiency of this new facility will increase by 5 to 10%. So maybe to give you an easy example, if you assume that last year we produced around 1 million pieces, we believe that 5 to 10%, so 50 to 100,000 pieces, will come out of this factory on top without additional costs. This is basically due to the fact that the ways between the separate different departments are much more easier. That it's more easy to transport also bigger lots of jewelry between these departments as it is right now in the existing factory, which is set up by 15 shop houses. So this will give us the opportunity to have a further lean production. Moreover, of course, is the future capacity. When you see the building in the lower on the lower picture, there's a possibility to also put on top another floor. And on the right of the picture, there's also still enough land to even build another factory. So for the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years, this is a sufficient place and opportunity to expand. The automated warehouses in the UK and Germany is almost finished in the UK. The system is ready. It's now about to get the jewelry into the store and have the first tests and get this running in the next 2 to 3 weeks. In Germany, we're right now about to build the system, and as Wolfgang said, this will happen in until November, and this will enable us to also on this section to be more lean as in the past, and also in high times when we have sale, when i.e. for the German market, it can be that and one day we have to ship around 4 to 5,000 pieces in one day, to be faster via this system than we would be by having this done only by people. In terms of customer satisfaction, that also in winter sale, for example, to be able to deliver in just a few days the ordered product. Then we put together some smaller projects and changes we had. First of all, the different numbers we had. We collected them so that it's more easy for the customers. They just have to recall one number, never mind where they're coming from. If Germany, Austria, or Switzerland, mobile, landline, doesn't matter. Then also the discussion we had various time during the roadshow is the star price, because in the past we had star prices very high, as given in that example by 8,000 euros, but the final price was about 300. This was fine for the existing customers because they know how this works. And in all honesty, we hesitate a little bit to change that because, as you may remember, our customer loyalty is very high. So 70% of our revenue coming from existing customers. And it's crucial to teach them, if we change this system, that the final price is still on the same level. This we managed in August. We had some preparation to do so, and this works quite well. And in connection with the third one, new payment, payment by invoice, and possible also to do payment by installments, these three measures together should help to increase, to get new customers. So basically, starting price not that high, being able to pay via invoice, so you don't need to pay the money in advance as so far. So the entry barrier for a new customer to check out whether Juvelo is worth to test is now lower. But as we have done these changes in August, time is quite short to prove that this what kind of effect this has on our business.
So preliminary results are very promising, but since we launched this only 3 weeks ago, there's still some time in order to analyze all of the effects. But I'm quite sure that in due course we will come up with detailed analysis showing the positive effect of that.
Then, shown on the previous one of the previous slides by Wolfgang, we expand the smart TV apps. During the roadshow, there was only the Samsung smart TV app available. This is now added by the Amazon Fire TV app, Android TV, and also HBV TV. So that we are prepared wherever the customer goes, we will be there, and there's more to come also for the systems of LG, Sony, which is right now in preparation and will not long take long to be launched. Also on the mobile phone apps, we've just launched in spring the mobile phone app for Italy, and as you can see that, especially for Italy, there is a nice growth in terms of revenue share by the mobile app, as you can see in the lower right. So this is increasing and now approaching 10% of total revenue share in the Italian market. So now coming to the financials, you will see the classic P&L balance sheet and cash flow. And we start with some summary, which is first the total view on the half-year performance. So we have revenues, gross profit, and adjusted EBITDA. Revenues in total grew by more than 20%, which is within our expectations. Gross profit in total numbers also increased significantly from 17 to 20 million. You see the decline as same story as in the first quarter we already had, and I will show you later on another graph to that. But this is basically, in terms of half year, the mentioned winter sale, but also the second quarter had a decline due to the fact that we missed for the second quarter the impulse from IESA but also from new products and new highlights, which we expect to come in the third and fourth quarter. Adjusted EBITDA increased in total numbers, 1.5 million to almost 2 million. This is a nice growth of roughly 30%, but also in terms of compared to revenues from 4.5 to 4.9%. And at the end of the part of the financials, we will have also some comments on the margin development for the second half year, so we will come to that later. In terms of Q2, to have that separate, missing the, as mentioned, missing the impulses from additional sale and new products, we still had a nice growth of 17%, so almost 20% from 70 million in 2014 to 20 million in 2015. Same story as for the total half year, also for the gross profit of the second quarter. Growth in absolute numbers for the gross profit, but decline in percentage margin. And adjusted EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA margin, so in absolute numbers, relatively on the level of last year, and in terms of revenues, slightly lower than prior year. In terms of margin, we always said that we need the we will take the proceeds to enhance our product offer and to be able to change our purchase system from commissioning to direct purchase. Of course, as we had the IPO just in July, it will take some time. This will affect also the P&L directly. But to give you an outlook, simply we took the demand group margin from our selling countries and compared June to August, and you can clearly see that the average of June is slightly below 15%, whereas August has a nice development and so where we achieve a group margin of over 50%. Basically, this is the change of purchase system, so we are able to buy the gem basically cheaper than before. But we see also a slight effect of the reduced gold price, and we will see it also in the P&L. We had discussions about foreign exchange losses in the past. This changed in the second quarter, more in the third quarter. So the increase of the euro against Thai baht also helped little for the development in August. What is key to the development of our company, of course, are the development of the different channels. We are right now strong on TV, but the strongest development we have for the last half year, and we've seen that also already in 2014, is the growth in the online section. And out of the online section, which has grown by 53%, the classic static web shops in Europe are those with the most significant growth, about 120% in the first half year. And this is also including the German web shop, which is, of course, more mature than the Spanish or the web shop in the Netherlands, and also the German web shop grew by more than 100%. So this is not only because we launched web shops in the last year, which now have full impact. This is also the same performance on the existing web shops. So now the P&L for the total group. The key numbers you have all already seen. You find this also in the half year report. The first page is summary, the most crucial KPIs like revenue growth and adjusted EBITDA. Just let me make some comments on some crucial points. you see the total SG&A for the total half year of 2015 and 2014. So in 2015, we have about 80,700,000, and for the first half year 2015, 17 million. So you see that in relation to sales, this is a significant decline. And just to point out that we have some one-off effects last year as well as this year in terms of foreign exchange losses, especially in 2014. We had also some income and some costs related to this income, which we subtracted from the EBITDA to show the adjusted EBITDA. If we take into consideration these one-offs on the total SG&A, this picture does not change, so that for 2014 we will come to 60.2 million euros of SG&A, which is a quota of 50%, whereas 2015 adjusted SG&A develops to a nice relation of 46.5% to revenues. So the cost regression is already working. So we increased sales, but costs are not following the same way. And also, if you like to go in detail to the P&L, you will see that especially cost of reach is a driver of that, because the majority in the existing countries, England, Germany, and Italy, where the cost of reach are fixed, whereas the sales grow, of course, lead to this cost regression, which we are expect to continue also in the third and fourth quarter. In terms of the balance sheet, sorry, I may take some crucial lines. You see the inventories in the current assets. Of course, they have grown because of the bulk purchase of the gemstones, which we mentioned also during the roadshow. This level of inventory will come, depending on development in the third or fourth quarter, down, and we expect this more or less on the level of in 2014 in terms of ratio between revenues and inventories. The second thing to mention is part of the non-current assets, where you see that the other non-current assets increased by roughly 2.1 million. This is basically to the BOI deal we have in Thailand. You may recall that we have a tax exemption in Thailand for the next 8 years. And to achieve that, we had to invest in our factory, but also had to make a prepayment for the board of investment of these 2 million. And this is what you see here, which is accrued and for the next 8 years. Down on the equities and liability, you see the total equity, of course, increased due to the positive results. You see the trade payables increased, which is in relation of the grown inventories, so part of the working capital, of course. The financial debt and other financial liabilities in the current liabilities is reflecting a loan we took from the CM Commercial Bank in order to be able to finance the bulk purchase. This was reduced after the IPO. And down in the non-current liabilities, you find also financial debt, 7.5 million. This is a loan we've taken from the Berliner Sparkasse. This will remain also to have a certain effect of leverage into our balance sheet. So in terms of cash flow, clearly the biggest issue, which is not surprising, is the development in inventories and other assets, as well as in other liabilities. This is reflecting the bulk purchase of the gemstones, of course, as well as the development in the liabilities. The other big change you can see here, the 1,988,000 net income tax receipts payments. This is regarding the mentioned BOI deal, where we
at the one-off payment to achieve the tax exemption on the level of our factory. Net cash flow from investing, this basically is related to the upper stores and, of course, investments in electricity, air condition, workbenches in our new factory in Chantaburi. So adjusted EBITDA. Some of you may recall the presentations we had in the past. This is just to show the detailed effects, how our IFRS results develop to the adjusted EBITDA. You see in the first line the losses and gains from foreign currency translations, 400,000 K. In the first quarter, we showed a loss of 1.5 million, roughly. And so the second quarter, due to the development of the euro against the Thai baht, brought us a gain of 1 million. So this balances to these 400,000 K losses. The IPO and restructuring expenses we have in the first quarter in the majority. And for 2014, we had this special project of the Discovery Channel, where we produced footages and gave information for a TV production. This was a kind of one-off. This is why we do not add these revenues to our operational revenues. So this leads to total special influences for 2015 for the first half year of roughly 500,000. And for the half year 2014 of almost 400 profit. So adjusted, we now have roughly 2 million of adjusted EBITDA realized in the first half year compared to 1.5 in first half year 2014. So, to give you an outlook on the second half year of 2015, it's not detailed numbers. However, we expect that revenues to remain the same and on the same level as in the first half year. We see that the gross margin, as you could see already for August, will develop accordingly, so that in addition to the economy of sales for the third and fourth quarter, in total the adjusted EBITDA for the second half year should develop further positive compared to last year. So to summarize, the revenue growth of 20% achieved so far, we also expect for the second half, while the margin, the gross margin will grow, and this will lead to further extended EBITDA growth in the second half of this year. So now we come to the key investment highlights, and which will be taken over by Wolfgang, and after that we are happy to answer your questions.
So basically, to summarize, Illumio is positioned in a very attractive market that is just about to undergo a major transformation. We are strategically perfectly positioned to take advantage of that transformation, as we are already one of the leading electronic jewelers in Europe. Actually, we have no information that we are not the leading electronic jeweler in Europe. All of our revenue figures point to the fact that we are, in our area, the market leader in the European market. We run a fully vertically integrated value chain, giving a huge advantage to our customers, and have a pretty attractive product range. These two factors, so the very attractive market and our excellent market position in that market, have led to a very strong track record of growth and market margin expansion over the last years, and we foresee that this is going to stay the same in the coming years, and that from our perspective makes us an attractive investment. So this would be our formal presentation for this call, and we would now be more than happy to take questions.
So I would like now to hand over to our telecom support. I think you are able to press 1 and to place your answer, your question, sorry. The answer is ours. And yes.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. The operator will announce your name when it's your turn to ask a question. In case you wish to cancel your question, please press star 2. For questions, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. For questions, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Okay, the first question is coming from Anne Critchlow. May we have your question, please?
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I have a few questions. The first question is about static priced product online. I think you call that your European web shops, but I'm just wondering what percentage of total group sales relates to static priced product through the website. So that's my first question.
Yes. So the total section of the e-commerce, European e-commerce business we have, has a revenue share of about 15-16%, and the static web shops now achieving around 7%, 7 to 7.5%, and compared to last year, it was around 3.5% revenue share of static web shops in Europe.
When you say Europe, do you include UK?
Yeah, Europe we mentioned because we excluded our shop New York Gemstones. New York Gemstones, which Wolfgang already referred to, is a hub where we basically sell leftovers, small quantities. And so this shop normally gets all the stuff no one else wants in Europe. And so this is not, in terms of strategic growth, the key, because the New York Gemstones sales in the first half year of 2015 was lower than the past year, basically because we haven't had enough product to provide to New York Gemstones because leftovers, the level of leftovers is lower than last year.
Okay, thank you. My second question is about active customers. You say in your statement that you're very pleased with the increase, but do you have the number of active customers or the percentage increase for the first half, please?
No, we don't have that right now, but we can put that together and provide that later.
Okay, thank you. And then my final question is about the tax rate, which seemed to be 21% in the first half. Should we use that figure for the full year?
No, because also as for 2014, the tax impacts we have are purely deferred tax. So the impacts we have are related to the profit. The majority of that is related to the profit in stock we have in the European countries. And so this is not really a tax payment to the tax authorities, but accounting-wise deferred tax. And the other point is that the payment for the Board of Investment we've made to Thailand is a one-off. So the 2.1 million I refer to.
Okay, so should we just use zero for the full year or second half?
No, basically, basically there will be no tax impact for 2015.
Okay, thank you. That's it for now. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
The next question is coming from Mr. Christoph Bast. May we have your question, please?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Could you take us or talk us through the different revenue lines, especially in UK, which lost, I think, roughly 10% in the first half? How comfortable you feel regarding a possible break-even in UK and Italy this year? That would be my first question. And the second one, you said that you are about to ramp up the UK webshop. Can you explain a bit more in detail what we can expect from this, I mean, as you already operate a web shop here, so what is going to change here? And the last question, I think it was in the slide about Italy, the revenue uptake from mobile apps, was that kind of natural growth, or was that rather triggered by marketing campaigns, price discounts, or other measures to shift customers from TV to online? Thank you.
Okay. May I start with the first part of your question, so the development of sales and revenues. Crucial part of our development so far has always been the lack of product. Also in the past, we had some up and downs, especially also in the UK, which is very much related to the availability of product. So, whereas in the first quarter, we had a very nice growth of more than 50%. We have a decline in the second quarter. If you look at the numbers in UK, especially not only comparing to last year, but comparing to the first quarter, there's still a growth. So that the effect coming up for the UK is that the second quarter in 2014 was much stronger than the first quarter in 2014. So this is also affecting the development in this year. There's no basic problem in the UK, but the product supply is not constant in the particular countries. And this is something which has always affected the development in the countries.
And if I may add, in the second quarter of 2014, the gross margin in the UK was significantly lower than the gross margin in the second quarter of 2015 in the UK. So putting that together with the cost savings that we have done in the UK in streamlining the operation, we still remain a break-even situation in the UK at the moment.
Okay. So in terms of webshop for the UK, you're right. There is an existing webshop. What we do for UK, not only for the web shop, but basically for the entire business, this is now converted to the platform we have also for Germany and Italy, and this includes the web shop, but this includes also the control of the web shop. So we simply put more effort into the offer of the web shop, and this will be aligned to the procedures we have already in Germany and also will have for the web shop in Italy.
So maybe I will give some more background information to that. As you know, we acquired the business in the United Kingdom, and when we bought the business, we continued to run the business on the platform that had been developed for the business when it was launched. Only this year did we start to integrate the system fully into our existing enterprise resource planning system. So in the past, The system that Roxinco in the UK ran was a separate television system and a separate webshop business system. The system that we use in order to operate Germany and also Italy is a fully integrated system that kind of allows seamless integration of the two distribution channels, and that allows a much better and easier managed webshop. So you will see a pretty nice development of the webshop business in the UK after we have completed that transition. And that is going to happen essentially sometime in the next 2 weeks, because we are doing that transition at the moment as we speak.
Okay, I think the third question was with regards to
the Italian app. The Italian app has been not promoted outside of Juvelo Italia. So we started to market this app to our existing customers, and not surprisingly, given the mobile phone penetration in the Italian market, this was taken up by our customers quite nicely from the beginning. We are at the moment analyzing the data that we're getting from our customers on that in order to analyze the feasibility of kind of promoting that app outside of our existing customer base, even more to start acquiring more new customers that will purchase app-based only.
Okay, thank you. And maybe when I can add one follow-up, please, in terms of the currency effects, when actually do you plan to repay that intercompany loan, and how should we expect the volatility and especially the magnitude of these FX effects going forward?
For the time being, we will maintain that intercompany loan as it is. As kind of we've had a very detailed discussion on the effects of that intercompany loan in the first quarter, we will, and as this is a purely accounting-based situation, we will wait until we will face a situation where the currency is at a point where we can offset that with the least possible effect on the total balance sheet of the group. So as this is kind of doesn't have a cash impact whatsoever for the entire group, we will continue to monitor very carefully the development of the Euro-Thai baht, and when kind of the Euro-Thai baht relationship will be a little bit more in favor of the euro, which we are not able to predict, but we see that given the current situation as a possibility, then we will try to offset that loan, which would allow us to do that in the least kind of with the least possible effect on the group consolidated statements.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Jörg Philipp Frey, may we have your question, please?
Hello, Philipp Frey of Warburg. Firstly, probably on the cost line, your distribution costs have been actually very, very good, particularly in regard to the extra distribution costs for the transmission that you stated in Q1. Should we see that a bit? That the additional costs for your growth project in H2 and the non-recurrence of these extra costs you had in the first part of the year more or less offset each other, so that we can expect a rather steady cost regression. So that's the first one. Secondly, in terms of gross margin, you now speak about a gross margin of somewhat over 50% in August. Shouldn't we expect with now the Thai baht and the euro dollar a bit stabilizing, that your gross margin catches up even a bit more, and that you should be, at least in the medium term, be able to exceed the 53% level of last year as well? And lastly, on the regard of your additional payment options, who's taking the credit risk in these transactions?
Okay. I will start with the last question regarding the credit risk. ultimately we have that credit risk because we use an outsourced partner that we're going to or that we're using in order to do all of these transactions. That outsourced partner makes a scoring on the customers and then accepts these customers or declines these customers. When the outsourced partner accepts the customer, they also bear the credit risk of that customer paying, and they also have the entire collection process under their control. But obviously, if the default rate of the accepted customers gets too high, then they will start to adapt the fees they charge to us. But so in short term, they carry the credit risk. In the long term, obviously, this is something that that comes out of our business model. But we don't expect the default rate to be much higher than maybe 0.7 or 0.9% of total sales. So it's not a huge credit risk exposure. The second question was regarding group margin development. As you have seen on page 17 of our presentation in August, our demand group margin has surpassed the 53% mark. It's close to 54%. As we have given kind of guidance only for some sort of ideas about what our group gross margin could be for the full year. You can see that in the second half of the year, our gross margin will have to be higher in order to come to the overall full year gross margin that that is being expected from us. So for 2015, we do not see that we are going to be able to exceed 53% in demand group margin. For 2016, this is a different story. For the time being, since we've had quite a significant fluctuation in the first half year of first going down quite dramatically, then coming back, we are a little bit hesitant kind of to already now say that it is going to be higher than previously expected. You can expect an updated projection of that in together with the numbers that we're going to publish for the third quarter, because then we will be able to project kind of the development of our group gross margin for the remainder of 2015, but also for 2016 much more precisely.
So, and your first question regarding the cost regression, acoustically, I'm not sure whether I get this right. You referred also to the development of cost of reach, right?
Yeah, you mentioned in the first quarter that you had some extra payments for double transmission of the signal and things like that. So I'm just considering...
I know, I get it.
These developments, I considered your distribution costs particularly strong.
Yeah, so... I think the level of cost of reach we had in the first half year gives a kind of indication what will happen in the second half year. There will be some cost missing we had in the first quarter, but we also will probably take some opportunities for certain transmission windows to acquire just to improve sales, for example, in Italy.
Okay.
However, in terms of relation, the development we see for the first half year in terms of cost of reach, in terms in relation to sales, is something you can also assume for the second half year.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
The next question is coming from Mr. Robin Maxwell. May we have your question, please?
Yes, hi there. Good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to just pursue this gross margin conversation a little bit further, and particularly in regard to the new capacity coming online by the end of the year. So if I understand the situation correctly, I mean, the mix of sales revenues has changed quite a lot in 2015 from last year. You've effectively increased the amount of items sold by 50% with the consequent increase in working capital. The average sales price has fallen quite a lot. And what I'm keen to understand is when you talk about the increase in the new facility that you could make effectively with the same cost, 1.1 million pieces, where today you're making 1 million. From what gross margin, what normalized gross margin, should we be expecting some improvement, if you like? Because obviously the situation in the first half of this year has not been normal from a gross margin perspective. I'm just trying to work out whether 53% is like a normalized gross margin level, and we should expect a positive impact on top of that from the move into the new production facility.
Let me put it this way. At the moment, we would not see why we should not assume at least a 53% gross margin for 2016. The increase in capacity mainly relates to a better cost regression over our fixed production cost, which is predominantly labor. So obviously, the 10% increase is not going to come from a more efficient use of gold and gemstones, which is going to remain at the roughly same level. And gold and gemstones constitute more than 90% of our variable production cost. So the increase in efficiency relates to the labor cost per produced piece. At the same time, as we have said,
I'm anticipating, and probably wrongly, that in the first half, you had some real problems with regard to finding an efficient labor situation in your current production setup, given the amount of extra pieces you've been making. Is that fair?
That's a fair assumption. Our existing facility produces at full capacity at the moment, a little bit above full capacity, and therefore there is a certain lack of efficiency. So if you would use the same amount of workforce in the new factory, they are going to come up with that increased efficiency, which is just due to the fact that we are running on full capacity. So whenever, for example, a order has to be expedited through our production pipeline, we have to pay overtime. Thailand has a pretty nicely regulated labor market, so you cannot just say, let's work a little bit more.
You've effectively lost, I don't know, maybe a couple of percentage points of gross margin this year through that overtime payment. Is that fair?
I wouldn't say a couple of percentage points. Maybe I haven't run a calculation on that.
Okay.
Maybe it would be 0.5% of total gross margin, somewhere around then.
Okay.
The exchange rate development was something that affected the gross margin a lot more, in particular in the first quarter. And the biggest impact, and that is an impact that we're going to see only going forward, is by the reduced purchase prices, in particular for gemstones, because of the changed procurement model. And that is something that is sustainable and is going to stay with us not only for the second half of the year, but also going into 2016. And this is why for 2015, we still remain quite optimistic that we're going to be able to come to a 43% gross margin for the full year. And together with the 53, and together with the Q3 numbers, we're going to start providing more of an outlook on how the gross margin is going to develop in 2016.
Okay.
Because in theory, it should increase, but we are a little bit hesitant kind of to promise that already, just due to the fact that in the first half of this year, that has been quite a dramatic going up, going down development of a large number of factors, and we would like to kind of see that situation stabilize a little bit more before we start adjusting our projections on that front.
Yeah. And what is a matter of interest, will the capacity be of that new factory without any further investment in numbers of pieces?
In terms of investment into an additional building, or
In terms of it, without any investment in incremental bricks and mortar,
roughly 1.6 million pieces.
Okay.
I may add that Mitsu Yoshimoto, our head of factory, also said that our existing factory has a capacity of 700,000 pieces.
Right.
So okay. if pushed, kind of, he might find a way to produce a little bit more out of the new building.
Okay. The other thing I've got two other things I want to just explore. The other is the relationship between the items sold and the average sales price. I mean, obviously, the move to online, the move to the web must have had an impact on that average sales price per item sold. But is that decline not just a bit more significant than you were anticipating? I mean, where should we expect this to settle?
No, not really. We assume that this is actually starting to go up again. That decline is more a decline due to a change in the mix of distribution channels and not a decline in the average sales price in the existing distribution channels.
Okay.
So since kind of rather large number of our capacity has been directed towards the online business, which has been growing quite fast, with that, since it's a less mature market for us, still face slightly lower ASPs, but we have seen also starting after 2008 in the German market, how kind of the average sales prices start to go up based on the trust that we gain from our customers.
Okay.
Basically, the same story we had in 2014, where the average prices also declined due to the strong growth in Italy, for example.
Okay. Okay. And the last thing, I just want to make sure there's not something lost in translation with regard to the outlook. At Bada Helvea, we have a sales target of 86.8 million for this year. You said that you're going to do the same sales in the second half as the first half, which would imply
Yes. We corrected that already. It's not the same sales, but the same growth rate.
Okay. I just want to make sure that's not.
Sure. Thank you very much.
And maybe one last one. Sorry. Just on the automation of the warehouses. Two things. First, what kind of capital investment is that? And would that also have had some explanation for the slowdown in UK sales in the second quarter, just changing to that automated warehouse?
Well, it's not only changing to the automating warehouse, but we're giving up our premises in Leamington Spa and moving to Birmingham because after kind of the developing the team in the United Kingdom, we started to face problems recruiting the sufficient amount of qualified people out of Leamington Spa, which is a little more of a small town.
Yeah.
And at some point we decided, okay, we would need the access to a more educated and larger population in order to recruit all of the functions that we need in the UK.
Well, you went to Birmingham. Oh, sorry, that's a little English joke there.
I get that joke, and believe me, this is not the first time I heard it, you can be assured I will happily invite you to the premises when you come there. There is no shortage of highly qualified personnel in Birmingham.
Did that disrupt the second quarter at all?
I wouldn't really say that it really disrupted it, but obviously kind of management focus has been not only on pushing sales, but also making sure that transition goes smoothly.
Yeah.
So this is just as nobody can state that, for example, the IPO didn't have a impact on the operational development of this business. Obviously, when half of the management has something else on the mind than kind of developing the business, that does have some impact, hopefully, because otherwise this would mean that 50% of the management has nothing to do.
Yeah, okay. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Sebastian Ott, may we have your question, please?
Yeah, hello. Thank you for taking my question. I just want to get more information about the KPIs, and there would be, on the one hand side, the number of customers and the return rate. If you could give me further information, it would be very nice. Thank you.
Yeah. So this was also the question, I think, from Anne Critchlow.
Okay.
We will put that together and provide those numbers.
Okay. The return rate has been quite stable. We didn't disclose that because there was no significant change in the return rate in the second quarter, so it still remains group level at roughly 36% of total sales.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Christoph Bast, may we have your question, please?
Hi, yeah, just one follow-up, please. Could you provide some more details on the difference between the sales prices per piece of average sales price in TV and online? Maybe a kind of, yeah, sales price split and some information why it differs so far.
Obviously, our online sales prices are lower than our average TV sales prices. In order to come up with a precise number, we would have to provide that together with the new customers as a follow-up to this call. We will put that together and add a second page to the presentation that we have uploaded and inform everybody about that, as we don't have precise figures widely available at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Mrs. Anne Critchlow, may we have your question, please?
Thank you. Yes, I just have two follow-up questions, please. Firstly, about the apps that you're developing, can you confirm that you will develop or indeed have Apple and Android and Windows apps in all of the countries, Italy, UK, for example, where you're launching?
Yes, we always launch simultaneously Apple and Android. Windows Phone is something that we have not developed so far because we're waiting for the new Windows Phone 10 platform, which is going to be a lot easier in order to launch apps on that platform. So that is something that we haven't done so far, but we will do so once Windows Phone 10, or only Windows 10 for mobile, as it is now called, will be out. But whenever we go into a country with an app, we launch Apple and Android at the same time.
That's great. Thank you. And then also, please, could you explain a little more why you are considering starting with a lower start price in the TV auctions? Was it because of customer feedback, or was it because of really investor feedback?
It was mostly based on new customer feedback that we collected in Germany. So there were quite some questions from new customers saying, why are your start prices the way they are? Doesn't this seem to be a little bit high, back and forth? And we also realized that kind of for our existing customers, this has never been a problem because our existing customers were just used to the relationship between start price and final closing price and used this as a guideline. But for new customers, this sounded a little bit kind of strange, and they gave us the feedback that they needed some more explanation. And we decided that this results in a potential new customer familiarizing themselves with our selling mechanism over a too long period of time until they have gained the trust in the selling mechanism. And we decided to lower this price a little bit in order to expedite that decision-making process, if I may say so.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
Okay, at the moment, there are no further questions. This was the last question. Oh, just a second. We have one more question coming from Robin Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, please.
Hi there, guys. Just one last question on the equity ratio. So basically, after the receipts of the IPO funds in July and the repayment of the loan, could you just tell us roughly where the equity ratio is today? I could probably work it out for myself, but I'm being lazy.
No, just have to think about that. Just give me a second. Because the reason why I'm hesitating is because we're in the discussions with Ernst & Young about the detailed allocation of costs, which are allocated directly to equity and which are going via.
Right, I see.
And also, we have to take into account the development of stock, which is quite crucial. But nevertheless, if you see the development so far, it's clearly driven by the stock. So roughly calculated out of the head, it should be between 60-70%.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, some of that. Okay, that's great. Thanks a lot for that. And all the IPO, all the rest of the IPO costs, everything obviously come in the third quarter.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, because they were directly related to the IPO, costs arising in beforehand are accrued or already shown as adjusted EBITDA.
So, will you actually offset most of them against equity?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cool.
Okay, this was the last question.
Okay.
Okay. So thank you very much, and we're looking forward to seeing and meeting you over the next quarter and then at the latest for
end
the next
November.
Earnings call at the end of November.
Thank you very much. So we conclude the call.
We want to thank the moderators and all the participants of this conference. Have a nice day and goodbye.